Chapter 153. The night at the old house, which, freed from the presence of the heaps, seemed purged of a disease, and I lay in my old room, like a shipwrecked wanderer come home. We went back next day to my aunt's house, not to mine, and when she and I sat alone, as of old, before going to bed, she said, "Trot, do you really wish to know what I have had upon my mind lately? Indeed I do, and if there ever was a time when I felt unwilling that you should have a sorrow or anxiety which I could not share, it is now." "You have had sorrow enough, child," said my aunt, affectionately, without the addition of my little miseries. "I could have no other motive, Trot, in keeping anything from you." "I know that well," said one. "But tell me now, would you ride with me a little way tomorrow morning?" asked my aunt. "Of course. At 9, said she. "I'll tell you then, my dear." At 9, accordingly, we went out in a little chariot, and drove to London. We drove a long way through the streets, until we came to one of the large hospitals. Standing hard by the building was a plain hearse. The driver recognized my aunt, and, in obedience to a motion of her hand at the window, drove slowly off, we following. "You understand it now, Trot," said my aunt. "He is gone." "Did he die in the hospital?"
"Yes."
She sat immovable beside me. But, again I saw the stray tears on her face. "He was there once before," said my aunt presently. "He was ailing a long time, a shattered, broken man, these many years. When he knew his state in this last illness, he asked them to send for me. He was sorry then. Very sorry."
"You went, I know, aunt."
"I went. I was with him a good deal afterwards."
"He died the night before we went to Canterbury?"
said one. My aunt nodded. "No one can harm him now," she said. "It was a vain threat."
We drove away, out of town, to the churchyard at Hornsey.
"Better here than in the streets," said my aunt. "He was born here."
We alighted, and followed the plain coffin to a corner I remember well, where the service was read consigning it to the dust.
36 years ago, this day, my dear," said my aunt, as we walked back to the chariot, "I was married. God forgive us all." We took our seats in silence, and so she sat beside me for a long time, holding my hand. At length she suddenly burst into tears, and said, "He was a fine-looking man when I married him, Trot, and he was sadly changed." It did not last long. After the relief of tears, she soon became composed, and even cheerful. Her nerves were a little shaken, she said, or she would not have given way to it. God forgive us all. So we rode back to her little cottage at Highgate, where we found the following short note, which had arrived by that morning's post from Mr. Micawber. "Canterbury, Friday. My dear madam, and Copperfield, the fair land of promise lately looming on the horizon, is again enveloped in impenetrable mists, and forever withdrawn from the eyes of a drifting wretch whose doom is sealed. Another writ has been issued in His Majesty's High Court of King's Bench at Westminster, in another cause of Heap 5. Micawber, and the defendant in that cause is the prey of the sheriff, having legal jurisdiction in this bailiwick. Now's the day, and now's the hour, see the front of battle lower, see approach proud Edward's power, chains, and slavery. Consigned to which, and to a speedy end, for mental torture is not supportable beyond a certain point, and that point I feel I have attained, my course is run. Bless you, some future traveler, visiting, from motives of curiosity, not unmingled, let us hope, with sympathy, the place of confinement allotted to debtors in this city, may, and I trust will,
ponder, as he traces on its wall, inscribed with a rusty nail, the obscure initials, WMPS. I reopen this to say that our common friend, Mr. Thomas Traddles, who has not yet left us, and is looking extremely well, has paid the debt and costs, in the noble name of Miss Trotwood, and that myself and family are at the height of earthly bliss. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.